Live from the Bills' famous cheese spread studio 1A, once again, the Blockout Sports Pod is back on the air. From behind the auxiliary master control desk in the aforementioned studio 1A, I am your host and moderator for this evening. My name is Travis Carter. Over my left shoulder, sitting at a bar stool, staring at a lava lamp, is the big fella, the Tuna Country, Matt Kempf. And behind me tonight is a special guest. If you are a longtime listener of this program, you know him well. Friends of the program will know him well. He comes on anytime there are big NBA doings to discuss. He is Mr. Eric Eichenberger. Ike, great to have you. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, fellas. Always good to be here.
We are going to, as promised, have the fabulous one calling in from Beachside here in just a little bit. That's always a fun episode when we get to do that. Want to remind everybody we are on social media. If anyone noticed, this last weekend I actually did decent at getting timely tweets out during some of the sporting events. Noticed some of you all interacting with us there on Twitter, X at Blockout Pod, and just type in Blockout Sports Pod into your Facebook search engine. Now, when we left you last week, we were on the cusp of the NBA Finals just starting. And we gave you our thoughts on, our predictions, our thoughts on how the series might go. Game one. Now, before we start, a couple things that we said was, number one, we didn't think that the Pacers could afford to get way behind in these games like they have several other times in the series that preceded this one. Game one kind of proved that to not be completely true, as the Pacers found themselves down by as many as 15 points in the fourth quarter before storming back and winning the game on another Tyrese Halliburton game-winning shot. Another thing that I had mentioned was that Tyrese Halliburton could not afford to have his good game, disappearing game, good game, disappearing game scenario, as we have seen at some points in these playoffs. That was definitely true, as in game two, despite what the stat line might say, Halliburton really was not a factor in the ball game at any time when the game was still in doubt. Now, a lot of that has to do with the way Oklahoma City plays defense. I am fascinated to see what kind of adjustments Rick Carlisle and his staff come up with for Game 3, which, as we tape this on Tuesday night, is tomorrow evening. I think, as we talked about last week as well, Carlisle and his staff have been masterful at coming up with game plan adjustments from game to game. And the game being at home, I think, obviously favors the Pacers in that I believe they will shoot the ball better. Obviously, the energy is going to be off the charts. But Ike, first I wanted to get your thoughts. We haven't really talked to you while these playoffs have been going on. So just your thoughts about the playoffs in general, the Pacers specifically, and what you've liked from watching their run throughout this 2025 playoffs.
Well, you did say to talk about everything, so I will say I got a lot of entertainment out of seeing you all beat the Knicks after they beat us, the Celtics. I don't know if you've seen that banner they had hanging up, New York Knicks. We beat the injured.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I saw that.
So And Coach Thibs getting fired is crazy. But, you know, I don't understand why the national media won't say it. They're so snobby and embarrassed that they lost to Indiana. Even though Indiana's a better team. I'm sorry they don't play on national TV like other teams or whatever. They're a better team. But that's why the man lost his job. And that's sad. Now, having said that, these Pacers, I mean, this is the year, man. I don't want to get too crazy, Travis, but I didn't ever know if you were going to get to experience the championship, and I don't want to jinx it, but I love this team, man. I mean, Siakam, what you're getting out of Turner. I know he's up and down, but all your guards, what they do. Nesmith, I mean, he couldn't get any time with Boston. Halliburton doesn't have to shoot all the time, and he shoots from his belly, and he's just – that last shot he hit, man, over Wallace was – I don't know what else Wallace could do.
No.
I mean, I don't know what else he could do. And I really didn't pay attention to double zero a whole lot during the regular season because I didn't get to watch the Pacers a whole lot and everything. I mean
– Ben Mathurin is who you're talking about.
14 last game.
Yeah.
I mean – you know, and not to Rick Carlisle. I mean, what a great coach. What a class act. I mean, I'm sure he's a no-nonsense guy. I can't say enough great things about the Pacers, man. I just love his squad. And I got a lot of respect for OKC. And it obviously it's not over, but
no. I mean they are as we saw really through most of game one and then throughout game two, they can hurt you in equally a variety of ways, although they do clearly lean on one guy more than the Pacers do. But, man, their defense is so good. The way that, I mean, if you're not strong with the basketball, it's almost a guaranteed turnover every time up the court. And when I was watching game one,
especially in the lane.
Yes. Yes. That's what I was about to say. The Pacers would get the ball in the lane where they have done a majority of their business, not only from scoring in there, but they have so many guys that are such good and willing passers once the ball gets in the lane. And they had 19 turnovers, I believe, in the first half of game one. And I would venture to guess that 6 to 7 of those were passes into the paint, and then whoever had it, whether it was Siakam, Turner, Nesmith, Obi Toppin did it twice that I remember, because, funny enough, after he did it the second time and he had missed a couple of shots, I said, Toppin is giving you absolutely nothing tonight. I would just as soon not see him for the rest of the ball game. And then, of course, he hit 5 3-pointers in the second half, you know.
And he's long, you know. Yeah. In today's game, he's going to hustle, and he's long. But I felt the same way, too. What they get out – I can't think of how you pronounce the guy's name, the lefty from the Knicks that plays for OKC, comes off the bench.
Oh,
starts with the H.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, his name escapes me, but yes.
I mean, I don't know how the Knicks got rid of him or whatever, but talk about a guy to come in and when him and Chet are playing together and Chet's actually hitting that three, oh, they're scary, man. I mean, but yeah, I love both crowds. It's going to be neat to get back to Indiana, but OKC's got a great crowd, man, too. I mean, you love them smaller markets. Hey, man, we got a free T-shirt, man. Everybody put the T-shirt on, man. You know, not all, you know, you don't see that with, like, the Knicks and Celtics that much. That's like they're too uppity almost, you know. But
there's the one guy at Oklahoma City that refuses to put the jersey on. He sits right down there on the court puts the T-shirt on. So he's like, everybody's wearing orange, and you got this one guy just wearing other stuff. I'm like, well, I mean, it's working to this point, so you got to let him go. But if they were on the verge of losing, I'd blame it all on that dude.
But, I mean, and it really is, and I think they and Indiana both have kind of a college atmosphere in those buildings. Mm-hmm. Like, notwithstanding the fact that there were some quote-unquote celebrities at the Pacers game when they closed out the Knicks, and I'm sure there's going to be some tomorrow night.
Who's the most famous Oklahoma City Thunder fan?
But that's what I was getting at. Like, you didn't – probably the guy that doesn't wear the T-shirt.
Is that –
He owns a hot dog stand downtown.
What was that big football booster? Pickens or Dickens or
T-Boone Pickens?
T-Boone Pickens.
Did he pass away?
Yeah.
There's a lot of money down there, though, man.
Barry Sanders, has he showed up to any games?
Well, I don't know.
I mean,
that's a good question.
You know, and the other thing, and we discussed it a little bit the other night, was all these national guys, you know, talking about, well, the TV ratings are going to be horrible and blah, 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 blah. And I cannot reiterate this enough. Who gives a damn? Like, I don't work for ABC. Like, I don't, as I said the other night, I don't care if it's the three of us in this room are the only three people in America watching.
It's great basketball. It's great kids. It's great coach basketball. It's great arenas and fans. I mean, I hate to say this locally and stuff, but sometimes people will be sitting around and, this is basketball country. No, dude, we just love UK and U of L, you know, because they get
college basketball, but we also are the highest market for NBA, well, believe it or not.
For a non-market, yes.
Yeah, and that's one thing.
But those people aren't the ones running their mouth.
No.
You know, they're just watching the game. They're not going to bars. They don't want to listen to the negative. Because, dude, I was at the Blind Squirrel the other day, and I couldn't get them to turn the Celtics and Knicks on.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Yeah. What was on? Just curious. What was on that they didn't want to put that
there
on?
There was hockey on, and I'm okay with that, but they have like 25 TVs.
I'm probably the only person. Maybe there's like five of us in the city that would prefer to watch a hockey playoff game over an NBA game. But I feel like no one I talk to watches the hockey game.
And I'm okay with that. I just said, man, can you just turn one on in the corner? You know, he said, oh, my Wi-Fi ain't working. You know, and I guess
it's a blind squirrel, buddy. I mean, that's a big, nice place.
Well, it was during the week. It wasn't crowded. And
No internet during the week.
I ordered a beer and, you know, you ain't going to turn the game on. I ain't paying for your beer.
mean, pretty much, yeah.
I didn't. I just walked out. I mean,
you label yourself a sports bar. You put the sports on that I want to watch while patroning your bar. Right.
Yeah, but that's also the place where, you know, hey, we're going to go out and listen to music. Oh, okay, the band's playing, but a fat guy eating nachos is sitting at the table with all the lights on at midnight, you know.
Yeah.
Not exactly the atmosphere for dancing.
I don't know, man. That'd get me in the mood. Nothing like a big plate of nachos to get things kicking. Throw some nachos, put a lava lamp in that place, shit'll get wild.
All over.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do have, excuse me, we have game three coming up. The Pacers, I think I predicted that they were going to win the series in six. I think you and Fred both had them in seven. And for either of those two things to happen, really, Indiana had to split the first two at Oklahoma City, and
go Pokes.
They did exactly that. Tuna, you can tell me what the line is for the game tomorrow. I bet Oklahoma City is favored by 4.5.
I was gonna guess 6.5. I'm gonna pull it up. Bear with me. And we are 5.5, so we split
okay.
it. I was saying, there you go.
So right in there. And, I mean, it's been like that. Mm. The Pacers have been underdogs in almost every game of this entire playoffs. It's crazy to me. And I look for Indiana to play their best game so far of the series tomorrow night. And I believe they're going to have to if they want to win, because Oklahoma City – is not going to come in to Gainbridge Fieldhouse and be intimidated in any way, shape, or form.
And they, know how to get up like on you like 15 before you know it.
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, that's what they do. They are just such a team of, but by the same token, the Pacers can score points in huge bunches too, and it's going to be a game of runs. I really hope that Indiana figures out a way tomorrow night to keep the game, 3 to 5 points or have a small lead at halftime.
I'm so glad you picked your phone up there because outside I heard the wind chimes. And I looked at Ike. I said, is that your phone? I was looking all over your backyard for wind chimes. And he was like, I heard it too. It's wind chimes. I was like, I don't think he has wind chimes out here. And then just now I heard the wind chimes. And me and Ike looked at each other like, where the hell is that coming from?
That's the Ring camera out on the deck.
Gotcha.
It makes that noise. If I don't have my phone silenced, it makes that noise when there's movement out there.
So. Gotcha. But, yeah, I would like to toot my own horn, man. When we were talking about game one, I shot out a score prediction and was off by a total of 2 points. Yeah. Exact score, off by 1 point from each team. So,
wow.
I know it, man. Said that was good enough to win a showcase showdown.
Yep. And, you know, it's stuff like that. I'm not as involved in it, but that's what keeps people interested that kind of – it's not like they don't like basketball, but, you know, YouTube just got some great 10 to 15-minute clips you can get caught up in, you know? So the gambling part of it and everything makes it so interesting.
There's I've started watching more obscure sports that I've never watched in my life. Not to say NBA's obscure by any much, but I was never a huge NBA fan, but I've watched more NBA from just because of gambling purposes. You know, teams that aren't the Grizzlies, but yeah, just for gambling part. But I say that, but at the same token, like, these playoffs, I've watched a lot of them, and I've enjoyed every bit of it, man. Like, it's been a lot of fun. So,
yeah, and obviously from a Pacers standpoint, this is and look, I really enjoyed those teams, the Paul George, David West, Roy Hibbert, et cetera teams. But this particular team has kind of captured the city and the state's imagination the way that the Reggie teams did. You know, I mean, and it helps that the Colts are on an ebb, if you want to be nice. And as I tell people all the time that weren't around or weren't in Indiana during those runs in the 90s before the Colts got good, Indiana and Indianapolis was a Pacers city and state. I mean, the Colts were there, but the Pacers were the dominant. The Pacers and IU basketball, that's what moved the needle for years and years and years. And this Pacer team, I think, has rekindled that kind of feeling from the city and the state, and that's really cool to see.
I see that they renamed a bunch of streets after all the players downtown.
And
see, so you have like Toppin Avenue, and
that's something that they do for the Indy 500.
They'll
name all the streets down there after a different driver.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's cool. And I happened to see a preview of the Open for the game tomorrow night, and I'll just say this. For those of you who are fans of the Indianapolis 500 and of the Pacers, I think you're going to get a big kick out of the Open to the game tomorrow night. Should be pretty cool.
All right.
Looking forward to that.
Ike, before we go any further, you weren't here last week, and we all made our predictions. I know we're two games in, what is your prediction? Who wins the series and in how many games?
I feel like Indiana has to win it in six.
That's
exactly what I said. Yeah. I said, because they took Indiana in seven, and I said, I love that sentiment, but I feel like if Indiana's going to win the series, they've got to win it in six, because I don't think you're going there and winning a game seven.
And I'm not saying they can't win on the road. I know they can.
They've been great on the road, obviously. But it would be a tough ask.
See, I think with the pressure on in a game seven, I would give the advantage to Indy, even if it is at Oklahoma City, because they just don't care about pressure. Like, I feel like they're almost better under pressure.
It sure seems that way.
But I don't. I think OKC's the same way. They just had been missing shots that first game, you know?
Yeah.
SGA missed a bunch of shots, and, you know, Chet missed a bunch of shots, but they still have that same confidence that Indiana does. I don't know a lot about their coach. Can you tell me about him, Travis? Do you know?
No, except for that he's very well respected amongst other coaches. He's thought of as a brilliant X's and O's guy, and he's also thought of as when you say players coach, sometimes that sounds like he's like buddies with the players or something. I don't mean it in that way. I mean that he has the respect of the locker room.
Kind of like Brad Stevens.
Yes. He very much has, and I don't think he's a guy that's going to like, you know, kick you if you make a turnover. You know what I mean? He understands the modern NBA game. And I really don't know where. I'm sure he came up as an assistant throughout the ranks, much as Rick Carlisle did. They seem to be kind of like two peas in a pod, only Carlisle's been around for longer. You know, because a lot of people don't remember. Now my Indianapolis people will, that Rick Carlisle was one of Larry Bird's top assistants when the Pacers made the finals, whatever year that was, 2000.
With Dick Harder coaching the defense.
Yeah. Harder was the defensive
coach.
Who
ended up being the Hornets coach after that.
Yep. Carlisle was the offensive coach, and Bird was kind of the figurehead guy, if you will.
A lot of people take up for Bird on a lot of these clips and everything where people say Bird wasn't down there with the chalkboard and stuff. Like, dude, that wasn't Bird, but he was in charge. And
yeah.
He, you know.
And he was so good because he surrounded himself with guys that he respected and he would listen to, you know. And I credit to Larry Bird, because a lot of great players, as we know, don't end up being great coaches because they won't necessarily listen to their assistants or listen to outside people, because they go, well, Jesus Christ, I was, you know, four-time MVP or whatever, won 100 championships. But Bird was smart enough to know that he needed to surround himself with these guys, and he trusted them, and he got them, you know, to an NBA championship and was an extremely successful coach.
And you know he's damn proud of Rick Carlisle.
Oh, of course.
You know, that's not only because he coached with him, but that's his friend, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Carlisle played for the Celtics, right?
Oh, yeah.
Back in the...
About 3 years.
Yeah. Did he win a world championship?
At least one.
With them? Okay.
At least one. I think he came along right after Quinn Buckner left.
Yeah. Buckner was there through, what, 86?
No, 85. He won in 84, then we lost in 85 to the Lakers, but he was gone in 86.
Oh, you know what? That's right, because, well, I'm not going to get into that, but there's a reason why I know that, and it relates to a season on the brink. But that's neither here nor there. anything else we want to talk about relative to the NBA or the Pacers specifically?
Well, I just wonder what the Knicks do. I mean, the Knicks get on my nerves, but then I like talking about them too. I mean,
every New Yorker.
I don't think. See, what OKC did hiring a coach like that, I think it's a no-win situation for New York, because that could probably be the best coach for them. You know, like Louisville probably would have been better off coaching, hiring the guy they got now, instead of Kenny Payne those 2 years, but it didn't go down like that. So they'll probably go with a name, but, you know, it'll be the same old stuff, man. It's just weird.
Well, I mean.
We don't speak that name on this podcast that you brought up. the guy that coached at Louisville for a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we don't mention that.
Well, Mad Dog caught him. He had a diatribe the other day on ESPN. He goes, well, what's World Wide West going to do? He's the one that brought Ken Payne in. He called him Ken Payne.
We can call him Ken on here.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes the knee-jerk reaction of these big market teams to fire Tibbs after he's done nothing but make them better every year. And maybe it's that whole thing where Bird always said, you know, after 3 years, pros will shut you out or whatever. I mean, maybe they know what they're doing, but the way that the NBA is set up with all these young up and coming teams in the East and the West. Mm-hmm. The Pacers aren't going anywhere. The Bucks are probably going to take a step back. Oklahoma City looks to be poised. If they can keep this team together, they look to be poised, you know, for the next 5 years to be at the top of the West,
and
right?
And not to keep talking about the Knicks, I'll stop it after this, but what hurts the Knicks is they can put all these people in the front office, but old curly-head rhythm guitar player James Dolan is the one that's really making the decisions.
Yeah.
I'm a billionaire. My daddy gave me this team, and I'm going to make the decisions.
Yeah, and honestly, as long as he's the owner, that's probably going to be the impediment to them winning a championship. And I know a lot of people that live up there feel that way, you know. But, man, we cannot wait for game three. I'm going to be beside myself all day tomorrow getting pumped up for the game. We will certainly be back here next week with a full recap of what happens in the next several games of the NBA Finals. Now, one of the other things that I sent some tweets out or posts on X or whatever you want to talk about that happened this weekend of local interest was the College Baseball Super Regionals that we discussed at length last week. Louisville had Miami come into town. We, of course, also discussed the fact that Murray State was playing Duke in the two series that had real local implications. And by God, Tuna, they both got through. How about that?
Was there ever any doubt, Travis? I think we...
There was some doubt in my mind a few times.
Yeah. I mean, they made us sweat it out. But I will say, like, this team coming together is just – I mean, Eddie King, the series that he had was absolutely phenomenal. I don't even – that guy, every time he got up was a big at-bat. He had the two-home run Saturday in that game. Unfortunately, we couldn't hold on. But I think the biggest moment – that wrapped this up was on Sunday when Miami's sitting there and we bring a freshman reliever, Jake Schweitzer, who has been phenomenal all year long. Okay, keep in mind, like, I know he's a freshman, but he has been lights out all year. Whenever you need big innings, whether it's 2-3 out of the bullpen, 4, he's going to come in, he's going to bulldog his way through it. He comes in to face Cuvée from Miami, who was all ACC first team, you know, one of the big hitters out there, immediately strikes him out. You know, huge, you know, coming out of the bullpen, big strikeout. Then he throws 9 straight balls, I believe it was. Could not find the strike zone.
Yeah.
It got out of control. So we had bases loaded right there. And at this point, Louisville's up, was it 2-1 at the time or was it 2-2? I should know this. Can't remember. Well, I'm going to say it was 2-2.
I believe it was 2-2.
2-2. He gets 2-2 with one out. He gets a comebacker right to him, flips it to home plate, gets the out, throws it right down there to first base to get that double play, and that pretty much sealed it. And then Eddie King Jr. got kind of lucky the way that that ball fell out there to get the RBI.
There were a bunch of those CNI singles.
It seemed like Miami was getting a lot of balls to drop, and that's kind of how they were getting on base. Yep. But it's like I touched on last week. I think this team whose bats have been there all season, but the pitching necessarily hasn't been there. Again, Matt Klein, I think, is the guy that's kind of brought this together. I've seen the best pitching from Louisville since the postseason started, from Nashville to Louisville, and we just got to continue that. And eventually these bats are going to catch up because we have yet to have our big bat performance,
right?
You know, consistently through this.
Right.
And we're going to need it, man, because we're going out here and we're playing Oregon State, who just had a great series against Florida State, who I thought was one of the top teams in the tournament.
That was a really fun series, too. I mean,
yeah. Oregon State, you know, that's a big baseball power. They've got a true freshman pitcher, Dax Whitney. I believe his name, Dax Whitney. Yeah, Dax Whitney. He's a freshman All-American. This kid, like, you would not think he's a freshman. He's going to be one of the top picks. He's just lights out, big right-hander. But he's going to be coming out in game one more than likely, I would say, in this, because Louisville, the pod that they're in, it's Arizona, Coastal Carolina, and Oregon State. So we're getting Oregon State right out of the gate. I would say they're going to pitch their ace against us. That would probably make the most sense, unless they try to sit on him, get past us, and pitch him against Coastal. If Coastal can get through. But we're going to, you know, we're going to pitch Patrick Forbes, who has been lights out in this. He's both starts he's had in this tournament. Like, he, what, 13 strikeouts down in Vanderbilt, and was it 9 strikeouts against Miami his first outing here? So, yeah, that's a big one. I don't know, man. I'm really looking forward to this. And
that game, the first Louisville game is Friday night. Is that correct?
It is. It's Friday night, 7 p.m.
So all of you folks that live around here, you're going to have to be either put the multi-view on or be flipping back and forth between the Pacer game and the Louisville game.
Yep. You're going to get an hour's worth of Louisville baseball before your Pacers tip off.
That's
so,
right.
And Murray State, for local interest, they went down and beat Duke. This Murray State team is yet to be denied. They are, dude, they are dangerous. Like, the way that they stockpile runs.
I know.
And like, last night, Duke had this freshman, true freshman out there who was just seeing stars, man. And he comes as first pitcher, or first batter he faces, home run right out of the gate. And you could see, and then he loads the bases up. Ends up making it out of that inning, just giving up 2 runs. But you could just see the epic collapse, which, by the way, Duke's head coach, he took the Virginia job today.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, he left Duke. And we're going to touch a little bit more on that here later on the movement in college baseball, but and why we may see more of it. But Murray State, you know, Skirka, Dan Skirka, their coach, I think it's Dan Skirka, he is this guy, man, he is awesome. He's got his son out there with him and everything. His son's running out on the field. He's hyped. You know, he's just – I love this guy. I love this Murray State team. They're a blast to watch. Now, they got put in a hellish pod.
Yeah.
The pod over on that side, you're looking at UCLA, who has been playing amazing. They beat a hot UT San Antonio team. And then you have Arkansas, who I think is probably the best team in this tournament from top to bottom. And then LSU, which we all know LSU in baseball. What do they have, 7 championships?
Right.
Something like that.
They got a 30-30.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's LSU baseball speaks for itself. And Arkansas, this is crazy how the tournament lines up. LSU and Arkansas get each other in game one. So – they're right there at it. The battle of the boot coming right out of the gate. But
Arkansas needs a more creative A on their hat. It's just kind of plain Jane. They need to.
Dude, I love that A.
Okay.
That's like the old English A. It's way better than Alabama's A. Alabama has that script A. I like Arkansas. Arkansas is like, yeah. We're classy A.
I got to say this. Murray State, led by Nick Shuddy on the mound. That was Mel High School's.
Yes.
Crazy story. We're getting ready. I say we're being a Mel High alum. We're getting ready to win another state championship against Trinity. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, less than a week before that game, his dad, who's the same age as me, was a South End Catholic legend, went to St. Lawrence and Holy Cross, played quarterback, real good friends with my friend Jack Rechtenwald. He passed away suddenly in the middle of the night.
Damn.
And, you know, we still had to play the game, obviously, and Trinity got us. But that kid, I'm so happy for him. I mean,
yeah,
he's
what a story. I didn't know that.
Because that's awesome. It would be easy to be like, not throwing the towel, but just after that happened, for him to do what he's doing, that is a great story.
Oh yeah,
I didn't mean to interrupt Tuna.
No, for a story like that, yeah, man, interrupt me all day, Bo. That's wild. But yeah, so we're getting started here, and that's your eight teams. That's the pod. That, like I said, Murray State got a hell of a pod over there. They're getting UCLA. They're going to be at 2:00 on Saturday. They get the day game Saturday. So, and these games are like every other day. So like pod A will play Friday and Sunday and so on. Pod B, Saturday, Monday, so on from there.
Let me ask you this.
What's
up? So I was on a thread with two other guys that know their sports very well.
Yeah.
And they said that they were watching the game, and the announcer said, this is the biggest moment in Murray State's history. I would argue, I'm not saying I'm right, but when that low-seeded Farid team in the March Madness beat Louisville, I know you don't want to hear that.
That was Morehead State.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Then, Zub, Jolly, sorry about that. That was Morehead State. thank you, brother. Because I was like, there's more.
Don't get me wrong. Murray State may have really enjoyed that. I don't know. Like, they may have really loved that moment. But the school was Morehead State.
Yeah.
I love it, dog. But you know that happens a lot in Kentucky. Yeah. The Murray and Morehead thing.
Same colors, man. Yeah. So it's like it's right there. But yeah, you got to think mountain boys and plains boys. You got the farmers and the fishers versus the mountain boys.
That's right.
My boy Butch Mosby was our senior quarterback. He ended up breaking a lot of records down there passing at Murray State.
Okay. Yeah. Murray or Morehead was Phil Sims.
That's right.
Yeah. And Murray was Ja Morant. So, and Popeye Jones.
Popeye Jones. I was at EKU when Popeye Jones, we lost to them twice. His junior and senior year, we had great teams, but lost to him in overtime. Man, those were some battles.
Yeah.
McBrayer Arena.
I honestly say it's probably the biggest shocker in college World Series history that Murray State got in there. I think they're the fourth four seed to ever make it to Omaha. So that speaks for itself right there.
Yeah. And I saw a thing today. It was all over social media that said, Murray State's baseball stadium, or stadium in quotes, holds 800 people, and their head coach still cuts the grass.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
And you see Skurka, he looks like a dude just riding out there on the yeah. zero turn. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and, you know, these dudes aren't making a lot of money. Like I said, it was a big deal that they got to fly to Durham.
Yeah.
So that was, I mean, I love stories like this, and now I'm sure they're taking a flight to Omaha. And what I'd love to see, if somehow I make it out there after this first weekend and hotels get a little cheaper in Omaha, if I go to Rocco's, I'm going to buy a round of Jell-O shots for Murray State.
In their name.
In their name.
As a matter of fact, if you end up doing that, I'm going to send $50 earmarked from the block out.
There you go.
And we're going to buy a round for Murray State so we can get them on the board.
Yeah, I don't want them getting shut out down there. Like, that'd be pretty bad.
And I'm going to buy a round for Moorhead.
Like, hey, Rocco, we need to add a team up here.
Tuna.
But apparently those what it is the money that they make off selling those shots, they send it back to the hometowns, and it goes to food pantries.
Man, that's awesome.
Yeah, which I didn't know that so until cool. recently. So, yep.
Super cool. Tuna, you have any other thoughts as it pertains to the College World Series?
No, that just that it breaks my heart that we've got to go against the Lumberjacks first rent thing out, dude.
I
like,
know.
I've got a special place in my heart for the Beavers, and it sucks that we get them, but you know what? Sometimes you got to face your friends to advance.
That's right.
So,
At this moment, we are going to take a real quick break, and we are going to try to get Freddie on the line, beachside. We will return directly. As promised, joining us from Gulf Shores, Alabama, if you saw the social media post the other day, I sent out a couple of pictures of Freddie, quote-unquote, traveling light to the beach, as he is wont to do. He is the fabulous one, Freddie Benders. Freddie, great to have you on the hotline here. Welcome from fabulous Gulf Shores, Alabama.
Well, Roll Tide, boys. What's up?
Dude, I got one question. How many times did you change your outfits before you called in?
You know what? I had my original trunks on, my shirt, my original hat, came home, took a shower, went to the liquor store. I'm only in my second gear so far. That's it.
I figured Lil Fresh had to get fresh for the call in.
Well, I was going to put my USA soccer jersey on, but I think I'm getting ready to flush that down the toilet. So.
Yeah, maybe you could just throw it off the balcony there at the condo.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to use it for a towel after my volleyball game tomorrow.
So, Fred.
But yeah, dog, I mean.
Playing with the boys.
One of my new Cody beers I've been testing out here. Liquid Aloha is what they call that, Tuna.
I love that stuff.
Nothing says Aloha like Aloha. Nothing says Aloha like Gulf Shores, Alabama.
That's right. Speaking of which, I got to tell you about some of the, you know, when you're on the beach and you're watching, you know, I'm just beach watching unless I'm playing. I can't even speak and goals are happening. Switzerland, by the way. And I think first 10 minutes of the game this game literally just started. This is like a high school game versus Argentina.
Well, we'll get into the soccer later.
Yeah.
We all want to hear about the beach.
When you get to the beach, dude, you know that you. Now here's what Tuna's gonna love is, and I. But usually you go down there to the south, and you've got your different kind of crew that goes down there. You've got your Georgia Bama boys. You know their saltwater life. Got their gear on, their little saltwater fishing hoodies that stretch, and you know they've got their croakies and their cool Bama hat and everything. And then you've got you know who's come to the party late now?
Who?
I've met at least five or six Boomer Sooners sitting out here, and now they have decided that they can come to the South for vacation because they're part of the SEC now.
Were they not allowed before?
Well, they are allowed, but I ain't never seen no Boomer Sooner around these parts in a long time.
Do they all
time.
Look like Brian Bosworth?
Yeah, they kind of do.
That's awesome.
One thing that they have way more of is tats.
Yeah.
You know, they've got tats. And buddy, they're probably...
They fit right in down there then.
Yeah, so they're down there grilling right now. And, you know, we've always grilled down there and shot the shit with Georgia, Bama boys, LSU. They're down there. They got their cornhole boards right next to the grills now. Hey, I never give them credit. They put the cornhole boards right next to the grill down there on the pool deck. And I was like, I like that. I like their style.
Fred, we need you to stand still because you're coming in and out from time to time.
Yeah, first generation Android's breaking.
Well, I'm moving around. I was going from the balcony to the TV. So okay, I'll hang tight.
Any more of that soccer game. So
okay,
just stay on the balcony.
Then you've got your Ohio people coming in. Okay, you've got your Yankees.
I know about
in.
Them from the lakes.
Okay, yeah.
They need to go back up.
Now the Ohio people are cracking me up because they've got their aviators, and they've got their designer. You can find them in a second. The designer, like the little paisleys or whatever, short sleeved button down shirt. You know. Mm-hmm. This is what they wear to the beach. They don't wear an old T-shirt with the sleeves cut off, dog. They go straight in looking good. The tight shorts, I'm telling you, you can see them from a mile away coming in. They don't know what a Yeti is. They've got, you know, they've got those bags that are like cloth but have cellophane in them.
I never understood Yeti people anyway. It's like, I spent $800 on this cooler, and then now I'm going to wear their clothes advertising for them.
Right. And it weighs a ton trying to carry that bad boy down there. Now, it does hold good ice. I will give you that. It holds good ice.
Yeah, because you need your same ice 3 weeks later.
I was going to say, for 186 hours later, that original bag of ice is still going strong.
This red snapper's been sitting in this cooler for 3 weeks.
Right. And you know what's funny? And those Ohio Yankees, they like the testicle toss. That's their
game. I don't know that game.
Hey.
They don't do bucket ball. They don't do, you know.
You should ask them if they were introduced to that game at a Ohio State Indiana football game circa 2004 or 5 is when that game took off at the Boozer Cruiser.
I figured IU was just challenging everybody to euchre.
That's right. They are playing some euchre.
I became so good at it, Tuna, they retired that game.
I got you.
After me.
And then you've
for
got
people
and
not
you know
smart enough
still...
for spades.
You know what still kills me about the beach, and I know I talk about this a lot, and I talk about, you know, I've already given y'all tips on how to get rid of the farmer tan. I've given y'all tips on how to carry your beach stuff up, the best ways to carry your load of crap from the kids and everything up the beach walk to get washed off and get up there. I've given you tips on that, but I still can't figure out the seagull family. The seagull family is they come out of the woodwork. You never know who it's going to be. It could be a Boomer Sooner, a Bama. It could be an Ohio person, but the seagull family, in case you don't know, I think y'all do know, but they're the ones that, after they're sitting down, everyone and Junior and little Jimmy's getting ready to start eating their Cheez-Its on the beach, they decide that they're going to throw them up in there, hold them in their hand up in the air, and let the seagull, it's like Alfred Hitchcock on the beach. I've never seen that like it's the most, and you know, And then you see people that are ready to kill them. I mean, literally ready to kill them. I'm one of them. And some people walk up and straight up tell them. I mean, the rules are on the elevators and everything. And the funny thing about the Seagull family is that they're clueless. They're absolutely clueless. They've done it. They know that. I don't think they have any idea that it pisses people off. They get so animated when it comes to seeing them seagulls come down and eat those damn Cheez-Its and goldfish or whatever the hell they're throwing out. And now what they're starting to do, they're getting smart. I guess if you pissed them off or someone, you've gotten too close to their umbrellas or whatever. Now what they do is they dump it before they leave. And then when they take off, all these seagulls start attacking all their leftover food. And they leave it laying there.
I'm like pro it. Seagull people. Yes. Love the seagull people.
The seagull family is starting to get real savvy, and I'm starting to get worried about it. It's really starting to take over the beaches down here. But other than that, everything's great. Weather. Got rid of my farmer tan. I'm getting ready to start on some 8 tomorrow. That would be banana boat 8 oil. I've now got the tan rocking. I mean, life is good. Let's talk sports.
You should try just straight up beef tallow. Like when you're grilling a steak, save the fat, the rendered fat, and just rub it on your skin.
Put a little beef bouillon in there.
Yeah.
You just rub a little beef bouillon on me.
So Fred, as we left it last week, we did discuss the Belmont Stakes, which took place this past Saturday at Saratoga. We talked about it. I was one that was fairly certain that journalism was the best three-year-old. I thought that he would win. I think some other people, I think you might have had Baeza.
I said I thought Sovereignty and journalism would battle for the win. Sovereignty probably get it, but I was taking Baeza for the value.
Right. And I mean, we saw Sovereignty, to me, proves that he's the best three-year-old in the world. I hate that he was not at the Preakness now, because I kind of feel like we got cheated out of a possible Triple Crown that wasn't Baffert adjacent, which would have been cool. But
totally.
What did you think about the Belmont, and was there anything that really stuck out to you even about that race or the other races that you saw that day?
Well, hell, I thought it was a hell of a race. But hell, I mean, just all you got to do is watch the Derby, and that's what happened. I mean,
yeah,
it was almost a carbon copy in 3. And I think if y'all remember, I told you.
Freddie.
Those odds
Freddie,
again.
Freddie. Yeah. Stand still.
I am.
Oh,
Man, you think it's the fan?
Well, I mean,
definitely it's the fan.
Maybe with that,
it might be a seagull.
All right,
maybe with that 1998 telephone you have, that flip phone, perhaps. But
charge your Motorola Razr, dude.
Let's try that again.
Okay.
All right, go.
Yeah, but you know, if I'm running this by, but I'm just saying that, you know, I told y'all you probably wouldn't get the same odds in the Derby. So if you did have those three in the try and all that, you were going, you should have been happy with what you got paid. And this time you did not get the same odds, and it came in the same exact way.
Right. Yeah. A $24, $1 trifecta box paid roughly like $13.50.
As a matter of fact, if I'm right, Final Gambit even got fourth. And guess what? It was a different race. It was the Matt Wynn. And Final Gambit ends up getting fourth. Who was fourth in the Derby? which is ironic. That was the next day on Sunday at Churchill Downs. East Avenue, who led the Kentucky Derby for a while, won that race. It's almost funny. All the races that all these guys, the Met, everything, not the Met Mile, but the Met Mile was a huge upset, by the way. But the other race that went on at the Belmont that day, where some of the past Derby horses ran. I mean, it's almost like they all ran the same places that they were in the Derby, literally. Burnham Square got second. You know, he was sixth in the Derby. It's just insane. I mean, I think what's going to be funny to check out moving forward is all these horses are going to run in these next few, the Travers and races like that, where they're really going to start coming together, and you're going to see some of the horses that have won some of these other races. And then I think we're going to see a split off. I think we're going to see Beza, Sovereignty, and Journalism maybe get a little better competition. And I think we're going to find out, you know, at the end of the year, who the best horse truly is, even though Sovereignty and Journalism are definitely heads above everybody else right now.
Right.
But and the Met Mile, Fierceness and White Barrio, what a shocker there. Longshot comes in and beats both of them. That was very shocking as well. But I think this crew with the Derby, I think there's a good little crew of horses. I think Burnham Square, Co-Battle was third, I think, in that race. Burnham Square, East Avenue is one of those horses, if you remember when we broke down the Derby, that was a, you know, $2.1 million horse.
Right. Right.
Kick butt at the beginning of the year. Rodriguez got fourth. He's still a decent horse. Mannequin Road came in second in his race Sunday. So, I mean, all these horses, I think, are going to continue to meet in a big field soon, and it's going to be fun. It'll be like a Derby rehash to see who really starts maturing. And
right, and
out.
I mean, there's so a chance. Forward. There's a chance we'll see a lot of those horses in the same race at the Breeders' Cup. Is that right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. There's a couple more races that they can run in coming up that are decent paying fields. Definitely the Travers and stuff like that. But yes, looking forward to continuing horse race. I didn't win nothing. I hit nothing because I had Burnham Square, and then I had I didn't bet Sovereignty, but I figured he'd probably win.
In the Belmont, as I said, there really was no money to be made. I mean, for the average gambler, there really wasn't. It's just the way it happened to work out. But now, as we have...
I want to ask you and Ike who the hell this Wiggins guy is for the Thunder.
Oh, that's who we were. Is that who you were talking about earlier, Ike?
I thought it was the dude that played for the Warriors. I just assumed it was. I didn't know who he was.
What's that?
Well, it's tough to go back and forth, but we were trying to come up with somebody's name earlier. We both of us couldn't remember who Ike was trying to talk about, and I think that's probably who he was trying to talk about.
Yeah, he had like five or six threes in that game, and in my opinion, that game was the same game that both those teams have played all along, except Wiggins was the difference. I mean, he had six threes or five threes, and that was the difference in the game, in my opinion.
Well, I mean...
In a nutshell, I mean, I feel like all their games are kind of the same style, same play, but I was not expecting him to come out of nowhere and have a big game like that.
Well, and we had talked about it from a Pacer standpoint earlier, and I had mentioned it last week on the program that Halliburton could not afford to have one of his disappearing acts. and expect to beat this team. And now he wasn't great in game one by any stretch.
Yeah.
He caught fire there at the end, obviously hit the big shot, and his stat line is a bit of a lie if you really watched game two, because he didn't have anything. He didn't do anything statistically until the game was essentially out of hand as far as the Pacers were concerned. He cannot afford to have a game like that these next two games. I'm not saying that, because clearly he doesn't have to score 30 points or whatever to affect the Pacers winning. But he does have to do other things well. He has to facilitate the offense. And the way that they are running Nembhard right now, kind of ball dominant as the guard, and then using Halliburton off the ball, like they're almost asking him to score more or at least get open. But he's got to be more assertive defensively. You know, he's not obviously a great one-on-one lockdown defender, but he's got active hands and he knows angles and he can get his hands in there and steal the ball and things like that. They need a lot more out of him in games three and four for sure.
Oh yeah.
But by that same token, as you said, Wiggins, we didn't expect him to have games like that. Hell, the Pacers have had 3 and 4 games where you didn't, well, I didn't think Obi Toppin would have 20 points, or I didn't think, Ben Mathurin would have 18 or whatever. I mean, these two teams are so fun because you never really know where it's coming from, right?
Right, right.
And a lot of time the defenses, they'll just force you to shoot that three and stuff. They've done it to McConnell a lot and everything, and sometimes he hits, sometimes he don't. But sometimes you get a guy like Toppin, you let him shoot a couple and he hits some, dude, he's gonna kill you.
That's absolutely right. And with all of this, with the college baseball and the NBA and the U.S. Open coming up and things like that, we have neglected to talk about the biggest sports story from this past weekend, which was my beloved D.C. Defenders rolling in to St. Louis, the belly of the beast, the Caw-Caw Battle Hawks, 30,000 fans strong, rolling in there and dominating and taking their rightful place in the UFL championship game this coming Saturday night at St. Louis. Freddie, your reaction?
Absolutely pathetic. Where the hell is AJ McCarron when you need
who was
somebody
that?
Somebody find him.
Who was that, Fred?
AJ McCarron. AJ McCarron. Come on. Let me tell you, and we gotta play the same team twice. I mean, really? Is that how the UFL has gotten, where you gotta play the same team back to back?
Well, there's only 8 teams in the league, so you don't have a whole lot of wiggle room there.
Well, I was waiting for you to bring me back down to earth, but I'm still going to complain about everything. I mean, I thought we made the Super Bowl just because we have 30,000 fans in the stands. I mean, in the UFL, aren't they a crooked organization to some certain extent?
Well, I mean,
let's get we need to get the freaking St. Louis in a Super Bowl before this whole thing falls apart.
I mean, I'm sure that DC is going to bring at least 200-300 fans.
Dude, let me tell you,
it's optimistic.
If Michigan wins, I'm going to go vomit in the ocean. Okay. I mean,
yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I'd like to keep, I want the trophy back with the XFL teams.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. We can't have any of these USFL teams sneaking over here and getting our trophies.
That's right. And I mean, Colin, of course, had texted me. He was texting me. We were texting back and forth during the game. he said, you know, make sure that you talk about his Michigan Panthers.
USFL scrubs.
Which, you know, I mean, give me a break.
It's almost a travesty for an IU fan to be pulling for a Michigan football team.
Well, to be fair,
are you kidding me?
His professional football team is the New York Giants, and if they played the Michigan Panthers, I think that
might be favored by six.
I honestly, at this point, I think that they got a shot.
You know what? That's very true. That is very true.
I do think that his initial draw to the Michigan Panthers was, I think, Stevie Scott played for them from IU, and maybe they had a wide receiver or something from Indy. I think that's why he picked them, which is just as good a reason as I have family in Washington, D.C., and I like going there.
There you go.
Which is why I took the Defenders. So.
Right.
The other thing, Fred, quickly, this is U.S. Open week. And I don't know if you've been on vacation, have had an opportunity to really watch a lot of live from the U.S. Open and things like that. But this appears to be a classic U.S. Open setup with rough that is...
It's crushing these dudes.
Shall we say challenging?
Yeah.
Greens that are incredibly quick, sloped everywhere.
Sounds like a Scheffler's paradise.
Now, I believe last year... And, Tuna, you can correct me if I'm wrong about this. Mm-hmm. But I believe you said last year this was your least favorite major. Is that correct? Because you said you didn't like necessarily the fact
it is my least favorite major.
Okay. Maybe it was Freddie.
It's Fred's. Okay. The Masters is my least favorite major.
Okay.
Or no, the PGA Championship is my least favorite, and the Masters is right before that.
Okay.
U.S. Open's my favorite. Even though they have low scores, but the Open Championship is my favorite. U.S. Open second.
Okay, so it was Freddie who,
and obviously I don't have strong feelings about the one and two spot. They're kind of interchangeable, as you can see.
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, it would seem to me that we're looking at another U.S. Open where and I think they try to do this every year. They try to have the winning score be as close to even as they can have.
Plus four is probably going to win this.
And yeah, I think worse than that is going to win this tournament.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, a diamond in the rough.
I can't wait to hear this.
That I think's got a great shot at dominating this field. His name is Scottie Scheffler.
Freddie really going out on a limb there.
I think the best thing
about if he was the best chipper in the world and the best putter and arguably under pressure, I'm going to say Scott Scheffler. I mean,
I think the thing I'm looking forward to the most from the U.S. Open this year is watching Tyrrell Hatton absolutely lose his shit.
Oh, my God.
Because he's going to have a breakdown out here on the course.
I mean, yes.
That's 100% going to be the best television you're going to see all weekend.
Yes.
And I think I'm going with Shane Lowry to win this thing. I'm big on Lowry this weekend.
He played well last week. He had a couple of unfortunate holes, but
I think he can keep his calm in a situation like this. He doesn't overpower. He kind of finesses when he needs to. Like this is, I think if Lowry's ever going to crack a top five like this, this is the weekend.
I will tell you this: this is the. No, I might do it just for posterity's sake, to be consistent, but this is the first. The first golf major, I believe, probably since we've started doing this program some almost 3 years ago, that I'm not picking Rory McIlroy to win.
He sold his soul for a green jacket because ever since that, it's been just downhill.
This is the kind of tournament where if he hits two of his wayward drives per round, he could make 2 8s. Yeah. And you played your way right out of the tournament.
I tell you, the best bet to make is Brooks Koepka not making the cut.
Yeah.
I really, because he's been losing his cool like the last few majors. Yeah. And like on this one, he may collapse in that first round.
Yeah.
And mail it in the second. Yeah. So, I think that's probably one of the safest bets.
So, Fred, you have Scheffler. You've got Lowry.
I got Scheffler. You know what? I'm kind of I'm gonna stay with long hair. Don't care. I think that Fleetwood is gonna have a good tournament. And for some reason, Strzok has been playing so good all year.
I can't with him.
That he doesn't hit the ball far, but he's really good at getting out of the rough and stuff. I'm looking at him.
Against my better judgment, I'm going to pick John Rahm to win this tournament.
There you go. Rahm is going to have a – I really do think Rahm will have a great tournament.
This seems like the kind of tournament that he would thrive in.
You got to have Shambo in there too. I mean, he's just such a fighter.
Yeah,
I think he wants it more than everybody else.
It's last year's U.S. Open winner.
Yeah, I did. Obviously,
I don't care what anybody else says. I swear, I think he wants it more than anyone else.
It's very difficult to repeat. I'm not sure that this particular course will set up perfectly for him. But you're right. I mean, from kind of a guts and a will to win type of scenario. I mean, there's no way you can say he doesn't have a chance.
I love the logo for Oakmont. It looks so like Disney and soft and sweet with the little squirrel. And then it just rips your heart out.
You get there and it's just a torture chamber from the time you step on property. I mean,
that's
honestly.
Seagull got him.
Fred, are you there?
Yeah, I said it's kind of like Bucky's.
Yeah, it looks so inviting from the road.
No, that's a bad analogy.
And then you get in there, you realize it's going to take me 1 hour and 10 minutes to get out of here.
No, man, we I have never left a Bucky's sad or in a bad mood.
Oh, they got Slim Jims now, dude. I was there.
Well, I know you've seen every corner of it.
If you're over in the jerk area, now they have these five-pack of, like, Slim Jims. And they're, like, they're not like, you know, like, uh-oh, after I eat two of these, I got to go to the bathroom. These are legit Slim Jims made out of great quality meat, not processed.
And beef sticks.
I'm telling you, it's the next great thing at Bucky's.
I mean, that's the the breakdown that you come to the Blockout Sports Pod to get that you will not get anywhere else.
Who has the best beef sticks?
The breakdown on the beef sticks at Bucky's.
ain't got no chomps.
Fred, anything else?
Are you giving me a last call? Yeah, give me a last call.
Yep. We're going to go ahead and let you have your say so you can get back to your vacation. We thank you very much for calling in tonight. It's always a highlight of the year when you call in beachside. So an early last call for the fabulous one.
Okay, well, this one ain't going to be pretty because I'm going to raise some slam some people.
Oh, Lord.
Okay, let me tell you something. So Spain loses in the Nations Cup that obviously mattered because Cristiano Ronaldo cried along with all of his teammates who played so hard and furious for their country. And, you know, that's what people do. That's what the greatest in the world, the best paid athletes in the world. Is not baseball. It ain't football. It ain't anything in America. The biggest paid athletes in the world easily are soccer players. Period. No one will ever argue that with me. It is a done deal. Alex Rodriguez ain't got shit on the 10th best soccer player for Spain and what he makes. trust me, Texas Rangers and New York Yankees. So let me explain something to you. If you watched Spain in the Nations Cup and Ronaldo for Portugal crying, playing for their country, trying to win, and this is a Champions League point system for the World Cup, and you're watching this disgusting shit on TV right now with a fake coach from another country, and I'm going to tell you right now, he's going to be fired maybe tonight. I am telling you right now, write it down, put it in the notes, let it hit social media, that Poinchetto is going to be fired before we play the World Cup. And it's going to happen sooner than later because they've got to get this shit restarted. I'm going to call it right now. He may get fired tonight after what I've heard at halftime and some of the other things I'm seeing on social media. And it just goes to show you, when you watch what happened between Spain and Portugal, how much these players, how much it means for them to play for their country. Christian Pulisic, you're a little dog turd in my life right now. I don't want to hear that you're tired of anything, you little scumbag that plays for some weak-ass team in the Bundesliga or wherever Whoa. You play.
Oh.
I'm going to tell you right now.
I'm taking strays at the Bundesliga.
You ain't no American player to me if you're going to sit out and leave your teammates hanging. And this coach, Poinchetto, who doesn't know what the hell he's doing, I'm going to tell you right now, he's gone. Things need to change. It is the USA, that 4-0 is the worst in 40 freaking years. The U.S. has never been down 4-0 at halftime in 40 goddang years. This is disgusting. And I'm going to tell you right now, this coach is a goner. Because they're going to have to do something about it. They're going to have somebody else come in and get this. Because the World Cup will be the most embarrassing thing. Ticket sales, no one will show up except the ones that hang out in Kansas City and St. Louis all the time. Yeah, good for them. But they're wanting the whole – they're trying to – this is supposed to boost soccer up for the next 20 years in America. This World Cup, like it did with Miola and all those guys. And I'm telling you, it's going to be the biggest failure this country has ever seen. Ever seen.
It's certainly trending that way.
And it's soccer, dude. It's soccer. Yeah, your kid plays it. Trust me. Every little kid plays it. And to watch, and if you think they're going to all, that the Americans are going to keep up with soccer and it's going to grow when we can't even field a team that can be competitive, it is going to be a travesty. So I just want to say that the USA, the players on the field, I appreciate them being on the team, but they suck.
Yeah, they're just not good enough. They're just not good enough.
And the coach sucks. And the Federation sucks, and everybody sucks. And I don't know what it's going to take, but I think it needs to – it's rock bottom right now. Tonight is rock bottom.
I'm looking forward to watching the post game after we record tonight because I'm
sure –
something
has to get rattled. They have to fire a guy that they just hired. That could be the bottom of the barrel.
Yep,
I'm just telling you, that's it. I'm going to end with that. But I am absolutely disgusted. I mean, when I hear Malik Beasley on the halftime show, probably the nicest guy that's ever been involved with soccer. Like, Landon Donovan will rip your nuts off, okay? Alexi Lawless will rip your nuts off. But for DeMarcus Beasley to absolutely at halftime say that this is the most pathetic thing he's ever seen in his career, that is saying something. I'll let you make sure you replay what he said at halftime. It's just disgusting. It really is. And I know a lot of people don't care about it, but if the World Cup is one of the greatest things and it's coming to America, we're going to fail.
It certainly is looking that way Freddie, we thank you very much for calling in. It did not disappoint as usual. We will certainly be checking in with you as the week goes on. And
it's Taco Tuesday. I'm getting ready to go make me a margarita and start partying on the deck, baby.
Beautiful. And on the balcony. Please keep the pictures coming, and we will apply them as you send them to social media. Thanks again for calling in, and we will talk to you soon, bud.
Will do, boys. Go Cards, and go Murray State Racers.
And go Pacers.
And go Pacers.
All right, Fred. Thanks.
All right. See you, boys.
That is the fabulous one calling in from Gulf Shores. As I said, it never disappoints when he calls in beachside. before we get to the end of the program tonight, Tuna, and we don't have a ton of time.
We're gonna talk about this next week, I feel like.
Okay.
I'd hate to compress this down because there's a lot of information. Yeah, I feel like
it's gonna be a
we
while
need to and, give it its due and time. And
we're
I'd like
talking
a,
about the House of Representatives or the settlement.
It's not the House of Representatives. It was a swimmer named House who sued, and it's the House settlement. A judge agreed to that and came out with everything that needed to be done with college sports. Basically, we're looking at the biggest shift in college sports in its lifetime. Probably,
yeah, it's changing everything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the biggest thing that's ever happened in college sports, probably.
So with that really needs an entire segment.
Yeah.
We're not in a big hurry to get to it because we're going to be talking about this for a long, 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 long time. So you're right. It wouldn't be fair to try to compress it into a 7-minute segment here. So
I'll do a quick touch on Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yes, please.
The first two games were two of the best hockey games that I've ever seen in my life. Both of them went to double overtime. Brad Marchand is playing out of his absolute mind right now. I think in game three he scored in less than the first like 40 seconds of the game. Goalie Bob seeing it. I told you I was pulling for Edmonton. I still am in this one. But I think the Panthers are just a full-on wagon, and they're just not going to be caught, man.
Boy, they sure looked like it last night.
Well, and I say last night, Edmonton was, after they got down early, they weren't themselves. They were trying different things
right, and
giving it up late. So that game is not indicative to what this series is just because Florida jumped out so quick. So we're going to see how this comes back around. I expect a much more competitive game four.
I would think so.
That is Thursday night or Saturday night. Hell, I don't know. It's coming up here. I think Thursday night.
Yeah, because they don't usually compete with the other championship.
No, they're always different nights. But like in the conference championships, it was every other night they were playing, and now that they're in the finals, the NBA's doing it too. They'll take 2, 3, 4 nights
right.
off.
Yes. And it's like game four is Thursday
night. Okay.
Yeah.
So
8 o'clock Thursday night.
There you go.
So with all that being said, even though we're not in the downstairs pub tonight, we are in the auxiliary studio tonight. I will still call last call, and Ike, we're going, as you are our special guest tonight, we're going to start with you with last call.
Well, I don't know if you all have checked out the Led Zeppelin documentary. It's called Becoming Led Zeppelin. Now, I'm going to give you a spoiler alert. It's just the first two albums. I don't know if they're going to make more or what, but it's okay. It's cool. The footage
is my two favorite albums.
Yes. The footage is great. The interviews are good. Jimmy's in a good mood. Robert's very honest. Now, John Paul Jones is always the odd man out, and he talks weird and giggles. He kind of reminds me of William Dafoe, you know. And
he looks a lot like him now, doesn't he? He's kind of aged the same.
And they got old Bonzo interviews too. But I got to thinking about it, man. You know, it's wild watching these clips because they're up there jamming in the late 60s. And these kids, black, white, you know, it's everybody, they're just dancing. They love it. But, you know, as time went on, rock music like that, it wasn't about dancing. But they were just having a ball, man. And I also thought this was interesting. I always heard, like, David Lee Roth say, you know, Sammy talked about love. I ain't talking about love. You know, there was the two differences sometimes between that. But Led Zeppelin was unique because he brought up love a lot, but it was like a dirty love, you know? And since with Netflix, you got the words and everything underneath there, I really got into that. But some of the best footage I've really ever seen, you would think, where did they get this footage? And was it black and white? And did they turn it color? That might be what it is. Because I remember growing up, I got all my Led Zeppelins at Woolworth. You know, they were $4.96. And I couldn't get enough of them. So that's real good. And on a lighter note, this is more of a YouTube thing. But I don't know if y'all been keeping up with the story about Chris Webber being the father of Doug Christie's kid that he thought it was.
Oh God, no.
Oh yeah, it's a crazy story. And that lady, the wife, she was real controlling to Doug Christie, like, you can't go out with your friends and stuff. And she did that.
I remember that.
NBA Wives. She was the first one that started it.
Yep.
But Chris Webber's been coming over to the house because I think he feels bad, and that was his daughter. But, you know, yeah, it's just you can get on YouTube and check it out. It's a crazy story, man. Because I was actually, Chris Webber actually went away, but I thought good things about him because he was a professor at a university. I thought, okay, it's cool, you know, no more timeout jokes and, you know, and then this stuff popped up. So, crazy stuff, fellas, crazy stuff.
Tuna? Last call.
Yeah, I don't have a lot this week. I do want to wish Aaron Rodgers a happy marriage. Apparently he is married now. So it just happened. Nobody knew about it. And when he signed his contract, he was wearing a wedding ring. And when asked, is that a wedding ring? He said, it is a wedding ring. I've been married for 3 months now. So I don't know who he's married to, if it's an actual person or if he just married
one of the lizard people,
his radio in his house. I don't know.
But and from his family story, I'm sure none of his family was there.
Nope. I don't know if anybody was there other than himself. And
hell, the bride might not have been there.
And his shaman. But anyway, and also 73 days till college football kicks off.
Yeah.
That's what I got.
Well, I cannot wait for that. I don't really have anything except to second what Ike said about the Led Zeppelin documentary. I watched it yesterday. I was left at the end of it, honestly, wanting them to keep going because I wanted to hear about, like, Houses of the Holy is my favorite Led Zeppelin
presence
record.
In Through the Outdoor, you know.
And they did have some tremendous behind-the-scenes stuff that I'd never seen. I thought it was great. I also watched a documentary today that for people of my age, it really made an impression on me. Ike probably remembers it. Tuna may not have even been born yet when somehow the Chicago area supply of Tylenol.
Oh, I watched that.
Was getting poisoned with cyanide.
Oh, yeah, I know nothing about this.
Oh. Well,
it was a huge deal.
It was the biggest news story.
Well, yeah, I could see how
going.
There was no seals back then. You could just pop a top and.
The reason that medicine bottles have seals on them now is literally directly related to this case that happened in 1982.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched it, if you're apparently of Tuna's age, he is not even aware of this.
Yeah, I didn't even
know that
happened.
A little bit older like us, and you remember it. You'll get to hear a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that I wasn't aware of that I thought was very, very interesting. It is definitely worth a watch, also on Netflix. Want to thank everybody for listening. If you enjoy the show, please tell a friend. I am continually trying to get better at getting on social media, sending out tweets. If I am not too distracted and nervous and involved, I will try to send some out tomorrow night during the Pacers game. You can find us on Twitter at BlockoutPod. Want to thank Freddie for calling in. Want to thank Eric Eichenberger, Ike, for coming in as always and breaking down the NBA as only he can. For those two guys and the big fella, the Tuna Country Matt Kempf, this is Travis Carter saying, go Pacers, and so long.
And cards.
Everybody?